You have found the Business Broker Growth Show with your host, Jason Cutter. This is the podcast for brokers who are ready to stop hoping for deals and start growing their pipeline. Our goal is to bring you strategies, stories, and insights that will be a catalyst to move you quickly from transactional deal makers to trusted advisors. Time for Business Broker Growth.
Hey everybody, Jason here, another guest episode. Today I've got my friend Jim Nairn. He is Vice President and Broker of Record at Trillium Business Brokerage in Canada. Jim, welcome to the Business Broker Growth Show.
Hey Jason, thank you for having me.
I'm looking forward to this. You are, I think, technically the first Canadian business brokerage to be on the show. I've spoken to several. You get the honor of being the first one to come on and be a part of the recording. And so I'm excited because I've learned a lot from you and a few others that I've talked to about the differences in Canada versus the US, which is where I'm located. And most of the business brokerage happens, you know, in North America. It's more in the US. And so I'm excited to talk about that. Your journey, everything that you went through to learn about the world of business brokerage to where you are now with Trillium. So let's talk, because I think this is a fun place to start. You told me you were working on your MBA. You had done some careers. You had some jobs. You had gone, you know, on different paths. You were working on your MBA, and then you found out about business brokerage. So tell me about that. What was that like? How did you find out that it was actually a thing that existed?
So yeah, it's, even today in Canada, the business brokers world is still a bit of a hidden secret. A lot of people don't know that we're out there in the marketplace to help people. So as part of that, like 11 years ago, well, a little bit over that now, I was again finishing my MBA at the Royal Military College here in Kingston. And a friend of mine was actually the receptionist here at the office, and she had suggested that I come in and just meet with John, who was the owner at the time, and just have a talk with him, because she knew I would need something to do when I graduated, because you don't just not do anything after your programs. You usually need to work a bit. And I was no exception to that. So I came in and met with them a couple times, and I just did a little bit of online research of what information was available about that world. And it just seemed that, you know, it was actually seeming like it could be a good fit just from all the different careers that I've had in the past. They were all kind of centric around just wanting to find different ways to help people. And that was one of the main keys with this, is that it is such an underserved market for people to actually be able to get, like the business owners, to actually be able to get someone to come in and help them through this process, but not from a lawyer or an accountant standpoint, from someone who can manage all aspects of the transaction for them. And yeah, it just seemed to be like a really good and unique field for me that I just kind of took to.
Yeah, I think that's great. So you found out about it. It exists. It's a career that you can do. Then what? Right. So you're working on your MBA. Like, okay. So then what? Then what happened for you?
So yeah, in the last year of my program in Ontario, you need to have a real estate license to do this work, and similar to many of the about roughly half the states in the U.S., you also need a real estate license. I don't know the number exactly, but I'm going with that for now. And so I did that those courses in conjunction with my program, and then when I was finished in 2014, that's when I came out and I was fully licensed and ready to go. And in 2015, that's when I kind of bought into the office and became a part owner of the office as well. So It wasn't a quick and easy transition for me coming out of the program. I had never been in a world where I was interacting with business owners on a regular basis or any of the other influencers or like that, the accountants, lawyers or anything. I had no predisposition to the work. So starting the work on my own, like opening up Jim's business brokerage, was just not going to be an option, or at least not a successful one. So the office here, being a part of the Sunbelt franchise at the time, was seemed to be a really, again, a really good fit for me to allow me to get some of the training and education and mentoring that I would need to learn the ropes about how to do the work when I was starting out.
Yeah. So it was an established Sunbelt franchise that you joined, right?
Yeah. So it had been in operation for probably just under 10 years at the time when I came into play. So it was pretty well seasoned at the time.
Yeah.
And
what was your learning curve like with this whole world of interacting with business owners? Finding business owners who realized that they could get help, and then finding business owners whose business was actually ready. Those are a whole bunch of different categories.
They are, and I'll let you know how it goes whenever I finish the learning of that. it's still a work in progress. So one of the other aspects that kind of attracted me to this is that there's always things to learn in the industry about the businesses, on how to do things as technology changes, as you know, preference changes, markets change, everything like that. It's all there's it's never really a dull moment, which is another thing that really appeals to me. So when I first kind of joined in with Sunbelt, it was in its early kind of growth stages, as far as I was part of the cohort that was actually helping to develop the training and develop new ways for marketing this, that, and just kind of formalizing the process. So I guess a lot of the stuff had been around in the systems beforehand, but there was just never really any formal training set up for people to go through. So I was a part of all of that. I didn't do it. I didn't work on it so much as just being a more than willing participant and contributor to some of the topical information as it was ongoing, and recommending new things to do and try and new things we needed to learn about and so on. But yeah, it's definitely a very ongoing thing. So when I was first starting out, I wasn't able to do this as my sole source of income for a couple of years, because again, I just had none of those contacts built in. It wasn't anything that I could just pick up a phone quickly and say, "Hey, Tom, I know you've been running your business for a number of years. Would you ever think about selling? And can I help you with that?" It just that wasn't a network that I had really available. So I had to do some of the early gig economy work, and I did some deliveries for Skipper, this or that. Then I was helping teach courses at TA courses at RMC in the early years, and until I was able to build up enough traction in my own pipeline, if you will, to help keep things sustainable, that I didn't actually need any of that secondary income. So It took a few years to get there, but just literally putting the nose to the grindstone. It wasn't something that came easy, but it was a work in progress that I did enjoy. It made for a lot of long days, but used to that, right? I was used to that. So there wasn't anything new for me there. There wasn't any surprises, which was good in that regard. But there was just a lot of going around, shaking hands, kissing babies, doing that networking in the local community for handing out the business cards. This is what I do. And if you know anybody that I can help, let me know. And eventually, again, it started to just build up in time. So,
It's one of those things too, when you the way you're describing it, I'm thinking about it too, versus others who, maybe started in the industry
as a business broker, intermediary, advisor, and they have a network, they've been doing it, they're part of a business community, you know, you coming a different way, which again, is why it's fascinating. I love having conversations with brokers and then uncovering, like, how did they get here? What did you do?
There's a lot of people in my world that came from either a legal background and accounting background. They came from, a corporate M&A structure, even for that matter, and in finance. And they were just like, I've already done this for whatever XYZ company. And I just felt like I wanted to do it on my own and I could go that way. And so, that was not my world. So,
no, right. So it's totally different. And what's fascinating is and I know that you're still learning and growing, but I'll say success that, you're now established, you're getting transactions, you've been working on this for a long time. And this, like, I won't say overnight success, but it's like, okay, so you're here. It must have been easy, or, and everyone's got a different path and a different journey. And so that's why I like spotlighting this. And so one of the other things that I know is fascinating, I mentioned this just right before, bringing you in to the conversation today, is that Canada has obviously business brokers, businesses, the whole thing, right? And you're part of IBBA and a lot of training and certifications through there. Yet one of the big differences between Canada and the US is that Canada has about a tenth of the business population and market. And I know that then became an issue with a Sunbelt franchise, where you were regionally limited, but that region, which others in the US might be like, well, there should be enough business there. But, Canada as a whole is about a tenth of the opportunities, right?
Yeah. So that was, one of the factors, right? There wasn't a whole lot of activity that we were seeing from outside of what was called our territory that we were initially allowed to solicit in through the Sunbelt Canada world. But there was starting to get to be some overlap with some of the businesses we were working with, because some of them have multiple locations that are located in Toronto or in this area or that area, and or they know people with businesses over there that it's like, technically I'm really not supposed to be able to help you. So and some people adhered to those geographies a little more than others in the franchise. And, as with any franchise scenario, you get some people that like to follow the rules nicely and some that like to push them. It is what it is. And there was definitely some pushing and pulling going on back and forth with some of the different territories that especially bordered really closely to one another. So, there are the limitations. So with being in like that Sunbelt franchise and having that geographic limitation of where you're actually supposed to be allowed to solicit to, like, you're not able to specialize in, say, like HVAC companies, because there's just not enough of them there to make a living, right? Or whatever other entities, accounting, you name it, dealing with those particular types of firms, it's a lot more limited again when you're stuck to the within those geographic boundaries. But now that we're on our own, that's not really the case, right? We have the ability to go essentially anywhere in Ontario and really in some other provinces and or territories within Canada, and even some in the States, the ones that aren't licensed, of course.
Yeah.
That I can help do some work in if it comes up, because there are a lot of Canadians that have actually operations in the US as well. And there's a good number of them here in Kingston alone that have operations south of the border that coincide with what's happening up here.
Hmm. So hit a ceiling with a Sunbelt franchise, or just a franchise in general, not to call out Sunbelt in particular, but just with the franchise model, especially with a team, multiple brokers in one territory, can't specialize. Like, that totally makes sense. So you pivot, you and your now business partner, you pivot, you start Trillium Business Brokerage. How is that different? I know one of the things you had told me before when we spoke was that, you know, you're running the business like a business, which, you know, I think some business brokers forget that they're running a business as a business, and they fall under the same, you know, kind of, let's say, issues that the businesses they're trying to help sell, those entrepreneurs fell under. But I know there's a lot to it, right? There's, you're wearing a lot of different hats. You have to do a lot of different things. What's that been like?
So it gets kind of challenging at times. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. I think I put an article out there a little while back where it's, if I were a business at scale, doing what I do, I could have upwards of 30 people working in the business, doing the different aspects of the job, both from just running my own office business side of things, and or working with the clients, helping them to buy or sell a business. So there's a little bit of crossover, marketing for the businesses we have for sale, and or marketing for my business, just trying to get new clients. There's a lot of some similarities with that, and making sure their accounting is in order and up to date, and just education. I have to educate my clients a lot, and I have to keep my education up on things that are changing every year, and the list goes on. But there's quite a lot of it that happens. Recruitment and retention, and just trying to keep build a nice strong team here with our office, and sometimes it's just really hard, as with a lot of people are finding nowadays with employee retention, just really hard trying to find and keep good people.
Is that just support staff for the team? Is it other brokers that you're looking for?
A little bit of both. So once we start building up the office a bit, we will definitely need an admin person or two. Right now, I'm the evaluator, the marketing coordinator, the marketing developer. I put all the stuff together, the CRM builder, the website reviewer, all that kind of stuff, right? Literally the guy of many hats, as you alluded to earlier. I do literally have and wear a lot of different hats, both figuratively and literally. It's one of those that, it would be nice to, when we have the capacity to be able to get some of that stuff offloaded and get the right people in place that can do it better and quicker than me to get it done.
That's always the challenge, right? And it's tough because then there's priorities, which is, the revenue, the client work, and the listings, and then fulfilling those listings and actually doing the job that you're promising to people, right?
Yeah, and we have to have enough work to make it worthwhile to hire the other person, right? Another person. Right now, it's just, it's not steady enough for that. So, for the last 18 months and change, I've had, life coming across and doing its best to occupy a lot of my time, and it was rather successful for a while. And it came to a bit of a head when we were doing our transition. That's when some of it became really hard. So now that things are clearing up a little bit, I'm actually able to get back into the office and devote a little more time to, our website, to our CRM system, to our this, that, whatever else. And I still have a couple months worth of work to go to get caught up on things and get stuff to where we want it to be. But it's, as with everything, it's a work in progress, right? I work with a lot of business owners who are sometimes the same way. They've hit a rough patch for a while, and they've got the choice. They can say, okay, if you really want to maximize your return on your business, I recommend you would hang on to it for a couple more years, do a couple little things. I can refer you to, a business coach or two that would be suitable for your personality and then your business, and to just help you get there, because, like me, I'm not the best fit for every business owner out there, and neither would every business coach be the same fit for every business owner out there. So I would recommend people with trying to match personalities and ideals out the best way possible with that I have in my network anyway.
Yeah.
And then see where it goes.
So in this, it's interesting because, you know, right before you record, you shared something that you're also doing because, of course, you know, you need something more to do. Is that you're working on your first book, which as somebody who's published multiple books, I know how that process of writing, editing, and then publish goes. And so you're working on a book for business owners, The Maple Leaf Entrepreneur's Guide to Selling Your Business, which I love, Maple Leaf for the Canadian part, which is so specific. That just makes me smile. Talk about that, not the process of writing, because that's a subject for a whole nother podcast about writing books and publishing books. But like, you know, what's the main thing you want business owners to get from? What's the goal for that entrepreneur?
So the biggest thing for me is with that book, and the intent is like a quick read to help educate on.
If you're listening to this and thinking, I want this level of authority, I just don't have the time to build it, that's exactly what Business Broker Growth does for you. Most brokers know that they need consistent content, better positioning, and real digital visibility. They just don't have the bandwidth to create it or the systems to keep it going. And that's what we build for you. The content engine, the visibility strategy, and authority signals, everything you need that we've talked about here. So if you want this impact without adding another full-time job to your plate, go to businessbrokergrowth.com to learn more about what it would look like for your business. Now back to the episode.
So the biggest thing for me is with that book, and the intent is like a quick read to help educate on the 30,000 foot view of what you need to know for the process. So there's so much involved in the process. Like, it can take years to go from start to finish to get a deal done from the initial time we meet to going through your evaluation, developing your marketing collaterals, doing the marketing, vetting the buyers, negotiating offers, doing due diligence, working with your lawyers, your accountants, and on the buyer side and so on and so on. I just want people to be able to, the business owners to be able to have an understanding of actually just what's involved in it in a simple, easy read. It's designed to be read like you should be able to read it on a 2-hour flight. You should be able to finish the book and have that basic understanding of what's there, right? So that was the whole intent, is to just try to simplify it and distill a lot of the topics down pretty quickly, so that there's something I need to pay attention to with this when we go through the process, and then you can explore deeper when we get there.
Before a seller ever speaks to you, they look you up. They scan your name, they search your LinkedIn, they read your last few posts, and in about 60 seconds, they decide whether you feel like a trusted advisor or just another broker. Most brokers never see that moment, but it happens every day. That's why we built the Digital Impact Assessment. It's a structured evaluation of how your online presence actually shows up in 4 ways: authority, positioning, visibility, and engagement. And if you want to know what sellers are seeing before they book a call with you, just remember, you can't improve what you don't measure. All right, now back to this amazing conversation.
There's something I need to pay attention to with this when we go through the process, and then you can explore deeper when we get there.
I know from your recent LinkedIn activities and some of the posts that I've been following on you, the most recent one is, the title is your business for sale or is it sellable? And where, either with the book or just in general, what's that difference? Let's say there's a business owner listening to this that happens to find this episode, and the big difference between for sale and actually sellable.
So we come across this now and then, and we try to get a good understanding of an entrepreneur's mindset when they come to meet with me initially to determine whether or not they're actually ready to sell. Because sometimes there's a very fine distinction of, you know what, I've had a bad day, I want to sell, but they're just not mentally fully committed to the retirement or whatever the next step of the process of life is for them after the business were to sell. And sometimes, this can come across as you know what, I think my business is worth $4 million. And if you don't bring me that in all cash, I'm not selling, I'm not doing anything. Or we bring them a reasonable offer and they're like, any trying to negotiate different terms throughout it, they're like, yeah, no, that's it. These are my terms and conditions. If they don't like it, right, let's move on to the next one. Mm. Or sometimes, you know, a lot of it is just because, again, business owners have their identity tied to the business for all the different kinds of right reasons. You know, when you've been working sometimes literally and figuratively bleeding for your business as you've been working in it over the last 20, 30, 40 years, you're missing your kids' soccer games, your family reunions, this, that, because people call in sick, equipment's breakdown, something else goes wrong, you go in to fix stuff and you're literally coming out injured and going to the hospital, whatever the scenario is, right? That builds up a lot of emotional attachment to the business because, you know, you've been doing this for so long, or sometimes you even, you know, you take out a second mortgage on your home and you to help fund inventory or this growth or that growth that you've been doing with the business. So you're really, really connected to it, like deep in your soul and in your heart, right? And it's hard to let that go if you haven't prepared for that transition. And so that's how what I was describing earlier, that's how that comes back out in a lot of ways. People don't even realize that that they're just not ready to let it go yet, so they sabotage their own deal. And so we try to get that understanding as early as possible in our discussions and when we're working with business owners, just to make sure whether or not they've actually thought that all the way through yet.
Yeah, I think it's a big thing, and I hear that constantly, and I think that's a big issue in the moment leading up to the business being listed. Is the business actually ready? Is it sellable? Do you have a sellable, viable asset relative to what you're asking for? And then there's the whole, you know, seller's remorse afterwards when now what, right? Like you said, the identity's been in that business.
Indeed, it's not an easy transition. That I've had people, you know, get very emotional, and we've broken up to the tissues, and you know, had some serious literal heart to heart talks, right? And sometimes they just aren't ready. They're not willing to ready or willing to let it go, and that's okay. Like it's their business. I can't force them, and I would never ever try to do that. Like they have to be able to come to the realization that okay, now, whenever that time is for them, now I'm actually ready. I understand that I need to, you know, let go, move on, and you know, I'm going to spend some time coaching my grandkids' soccer teams or whatever the scenario is that they feel they can now shift their world into this new dynamic. But they need to replace that purpose that the business gave them with something else. Just going and simply playing golf every day for the next 5 years, it's not going to cut it. It's just that becomes very, very quick and very old. Usually after most times within 6 months, sometimes, you know, within a couple of years, or it'd be like, yeah, okay, I've played every golf course I could ever want to play enough times. I'm bored to tears. I need something to do. So, yeah.
Yeah. I could see that, especially going back to what you said about the identity for those business owners, founders, in what they've been doing for a long time. You know, you look at people who at a company back when that was a thing, where you're at a company for 20, 30, 40 years, and then you retire and it's like, okay, now what? Like it's a huge chapter and a huge identity and a huge portion. They get to fill it with something. And some people do well, some people don't do well. Some people, you know, they have things that they've wanted to do and then they go do those, and others completely fall apart. You hear those stories about people who, you know, pass away within 6 months of retiring because they got nothing else.
It's a very sad but all true scenario that can happen, and so that's a kind of a dual reason to some of the mantras that we tend to put out in our industry, where the main one a lot of people would hear is that if you come to see us about 3 to 5 years beforehand, before you're actually ready to pull the trigger, we can help you, you know, get your business ready. But part of that is also getting the business owner ready. Like they're actually working through the process. Their brain is now thinking, all right, I'm actually planning on selling and I'm doing this work to actually sell my business. Then, you know what, I'm going to actually need something to do after the fact. So it just helps them sink that in a little bit more and a little easier, instead of just coming to me when like the day of and saying, all right, I've had enough, I need out. Then sometimes it gets a little harder to work with. Going back to that mantra, I actually try to, I'm working on changing that from a 3 to 5 year window to a 10 year window.
Wow.
So people can have, like, if they can come to me or people like me in their 40s and 50s and say, listen, like, I want to retire by 60, 65, whatever that magic number is. If you can, like, the 3 to 5 year window will allow you to get your ducks in a row, but it won't allow you to, you know, typically change a $1 million business to a 5 or a 10 million or 20 million, whatever number you want or whatever number you think you need. You know, within that 3 to 5 years, it's likely not going to happen. Yeah. But if you have a 10-year window, like imagine how much you could actually achieve within that amount of time if you were to set a deliberate plan to say, listen, this is the goal I need to reach. Here's where we are. You get your business coaches and whatever your team in place and your board, and you say, okay, this is our goal. This is where we're going. Let's start steering the ship. And you have a much better chance. And I typically tend to think that if you were to work in that 10-year window for that goal, you would likely exceed whatever that goal is within that 10-year term. I just see it making much more sense to do that as opposed to the shorter window, which is still good. There's nothing wrong with that. If you've got that 3 to 5 year window and that's where you're at, you know what? Great. Like I can still work with that. That still gives us time to do some things and help improve the value and make the transition that much easier for everyone involved. And if you're coming to me on the day of, which is still 95-80% of the people that I work with, again, great. I would be happy to help you and I can still help you. It's just the options are limited as to how much help I can provide you compared to the other two scenarios.
Yeah, it's one of those things. Obviously, more time is better. And it's fascinating how founder business owners, they start a business for whatever reason, instead of working somewhere. Normally, you're working, you're putting away savings, you're putting into a 401k, you're planning for retirement, you're saving money, you're planning for this transition. And then how many business owners don't do that same thing? They're just in the act of running the business and being a business owner. And sometimes just in the trenches for so long, they don't look up at all to do any of that like long range planning. How many businesses don't even get ready to sell or aren't even thinking about selling until, you know, something happens that triggers it, a divorce, a death, you know, anything like that, that then it's like, okay, now I've got to do it or I'm tired, I'm burnt out. And it's like, okay, but what have you been building? And of course the ideal is build to sell, but that's a subset of a subset that actually from the beginning plans that out and maps that out, which of course, the more time they can get with someone like you, then they can really line things up better, which is what I'm hearing you say.
Indeed. Like again, I would not be the only person on that team, but I would definitely be a good part of the team to help them do it. And I'm not going to be the one to again be the business coach and or the financial coach or this or that or the accounting person, but I'll definitely be able to say, you know what, you need to tweak these up, this up or that up, and your value is now here. So this is the next growth stage that you need to hit so that we can keep on track for the target and then work with the team from there to say, let's put some gas on this fire.
Yeah, that sounds good. Hopefully people will find this and your book when it comes out and then be able to start that planning as early as possible. So let's move to the next segment of the show, which is the broker marketing tips. This is the segment about the things that you found, especially in your journey, starting out with no network, no contacts, just learning the industry and then also
you know, developing that network to now starting a new practice, a new brokerage with your partner and all of that. So I'm curious, I'd love to hear what your, you know, marketing growth tips, the things that you found works for you, you know, that other brokers might get, you know, some value from. So what do you put on that list? What's the first one you would have on the broker growth tips?
Well, I think some of the biggest ones are the old fashioned staples for me. And again, I'm still growing and learning this solo journey as I've already alluded to. But for me, a lot of it comes down to the community, like the shaking hands, the kissing babies, and just going out and reminding people that I'm still here. And I'm still raring to go and ready to help. And it just goes a long way when other people are asking, you know, because people ask their friends, right? They're not just going to call me up one day when they're sitting in the office going, I think I'm going to call Jim, because they have no idea who the heck I am. They're going to go and talk to their friends and say, hey, you know what? I think I'm starting to get tired, or I think I really need to start considering what to do with my business when I'm ready to retire. Do you know anybody that I should talk to? And again, the more that my name is out there within that local community, and the more people are willing to share it, right? So it's like everything else. You drive by the bus signs or the bus stops or the billboards, and you see them up all the time. Sometimes there's a little wear and tear on the ad, and it's like, is that person really still in business? Not really showing up there. But so then people get a little curious, right? Are they still even out there? But when they see you out in the community and talking and networking, rubbing elbows, whatever verbiage you want to use for that, again, the more they're willing to help promote you in the community, right? Obviously, the standard, you know, today your SEO, all that kind of stuff goes without saying. You need your basics for that. But again, the traditional things for us, the community network, and then just some direct outreach, good old fashioned mail, not sending like you know, flyers or standard form letters, but just some good old fashioned friendly direct mail that will help get people's attention to say, hey, you know what, this is a little different, this isn't the same as everything else I've been getting, I like the way that this looks, and then kind of going from there. But it's there's a lot out there, and I think sometimes as well for me, just different ways that you can set yourself apart from everybody else. So the book was a big deal for that for me. Not everybody. I know there's a few people here in Canada that have written books. So I've tried to buy them from my peers that I know have done it. And it just helps, gives you that extra credibility, right? When someone actually goes to do a little bit of research on the brokers they're working with, it's like, oh, you know, this person's got one or two or three or whatever number of books, they've got umpteen letters behind their name versus somebody that's you know, just starting out in the industry. Not that there's anything wrong with new people coming into the industry, provided they can be mentored by other people that have the experience to help guide them through the process, because I started somewhere and somebody's gonna have to start after me, so you know, it's they need to learn as well. So
yeah,
just making sure that, again, if you're dealing with someone who's a little greener behind the ears, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Chances are they've already got more education than just your average person, again, walking in off the street. But just trying to make sure that they have a team behind them that they can access to help them out when they're working through the process, because there's a good chance they haven't seen everything that's going to be happening in your deal along the way, because there's always something new happening in any deal along the way. It's always
something.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So that's, those are the biggest things for me. Just the continued learning, finding ways to separate yourself and just getting out. Don't be too abashed with self-promotion, because you gotta get your name out there. So that's,
I think that's good, and I like those. Obviously, anyone who knows me, especially with what we do here, like that falls under everything that I support. And, you know, it's also about just doing it constantly, right? And making sure you allot that time. I'm thinking about you as the, as Jim, the hat wearer, right? Like still making sure you do that, because, you know, if you don't do those activities, you might not feel it today, but in 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, then you're going to start to notice.
It won't take long for, missing it 1 or 2 days to turn into 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. And then where you feel that effect, because it's really planting seeds now, because like you said, you meet somebody, they know who you are. Maybe in a couple months, they're in a conversation. They're like, oh yeah, I know a guy that could help you. Right. But if you stop doing those things for any period of time, those conversations don't happen about you. And so it's like this constant thing. Right.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. All right. So let's go to the next segment of the show, which I always learn a lot from. And I think this is fascinating. And I know there's a scenario that you have that I've never thought of before and I couldn't imagine. But this is the deal that got away. This is the lessons of the lost deal. And so this is something where you had a transaction, went sideways for one reason or another at some point in the deal process, wherever that was, you know, and then what to learn from it, how to take from that, how to use that as a tale for others to learn from, hopefully. So, you know, walk us through what happened in the one that jumps to mind.
So this was a very different scenario and not something that has happened a whole lot. But one of the things you hear in our industry is you try not to let the buyer and the seller meet on their own without you or someone from your team or somebody there to help be a buffer, if you will. Because people are different, right? And sometimes how they behave with other people around is different than what they would normally behaving like if nobody else was around. So this is kind of, I think, a bit of an example of that. A number of years ago, my partner was just before I came on board here, my partner had a deal where both the buyer and the seller were getting along really great for this particular business. They were all laughing, joking together. Everything was going swimmingly, no issues. The kind of offer was being accepted. It was in the due diligence. They were working through things, and then all of a sudden, they were both just the time of the year. They were going away on holidays. So I was like, okay, great. You know what? We can still work on some stuff. You know, the technology was starting to come around that you could do a little bit of work remotely, this, that, whatever else. So they both went away on their holidays. And we're up here in Canada in our area here in Kingston, and they both went down to the States for holidays. But lo and behold, it was a little bit more than that. They both went down to Florida for the holidays, but not just that. They actually went down and they went to the same region of Florida. They actually met up at a bar. Like they were that close that they met up with each other at a bar down in Florida while they were both on. They still initially got along great, but all of a sudden there was a turning point in the conversation that happened down there, and we don't know a lot of the ins and outs of it, but basically the one party got turned off. The other party just, there were some interactions. I think there was a few extra libations that were being consumed during the conversation. And the next thing you know, it's like, yeah, I'm not going through with this deal anymore. It's just not happening again. I don't know the specifics of which side of the deal it was that got upset and called it off, but it happened to the point that, yeah, it wasn't recoverable. It was, the deal was done. So basically now my partner has a pretty, you know, understandable fear of not letting people get together and do much without us, someone being around. Because it can, you know, sometimes just that little level of understanding of what it is they're trying to say and what the other person's trying to ask, or vice versa, it just helps us, you know, with us being there to just help smooth or provide some quick answers to things and just take away some of the rough edges now and then of some people's personalities. So it's, you know, again, just trying not to let somebody blow up the deal just for a bad day, or you had a bad moment, whatever the scenario is. If we can help avoid that, then that's definitely the way that we prefer to go.
Well, and it's interesting because at first thought, when you were describing this to me, I was thinking like there shouldn't be an issue if the buyer and seller meet separately and without, I won't say representation, that's really strong, but like without somebody there to just guide it and keep it within there, like that shouldn't be an issue. I know the other brokers who set that up and they're okay with it, especially after the initial meetings, right? Like once everyone gets to know each other, you know, the buyer and seller are going to be working together during and after the transaction. I've got other guests that are very pro having them chat on a regular basis. However, then I think about the scenario where they're both on vacation, they're both at a bar. Like you said, there's probably some drinking going on.
Yeah.
Could be things that the buyer disclosed about the business, like, you know, some skeletons. It could be the seller was talking about skeletons and things. And then the buyer, who knows, they could have been talking about what they were going to do. It's like, I know you like all your employees, but I'm probably going to fire them all, like, you know, next month. Could have, you know, I'm just thinking of like all the scenarios when, you know, people start getting real. You know, and then, you know, where that could sink it. I'm also thinking like political affiliations or like talking about politics or like, you know, when you start getting into that realm, it's very, I could totally see that like one party upsetting the other in any of those scenarios.
Yeah, it was just an unfortunate thing. And you know, I know a lot of other people in our industry that are okay with setting up meetings, and they actually do it on a regular basis where they have them meet once a week or every other week, whatever it is, to make sure everybody touches base. And I'm okay with that. Again, it's the scenario of going away on holidays, right? That's not really how you want that to go, especially before the deal is done. If the deal is already done and they decide to go away on holidays, you know what? All the power to you, right? But yeah, beforehand, it still can be a delicate balance of I'm just trying to learn about you and like you, and then all of a sudden, it doesn't take a whole lot for things to go awry in that particular kind of situation. But certainly, yeah, when we're working through, you know, especially a prolonged diligence process, yeah, we try to schedule regular things, and once a month, depending how far the geographies are, we at least try to incorporate a video call, you know, and or an in-person visit, because, you know, you want to make sure everybody's still on board. So yeah, hey, we try to facilitate as best we can.
That's wild to think about. It is funny in retrospect as a story. It is not funny in the business deal that didn't happen and what it meant to you as well. You know, it's you gotta kind of laugh to keep from crying, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, one of those scenarios for sure.
something in that. But I appreciate you sharing. Obviously, it's good, you know, cautionary tale. And where's the edge of them being too familiar with each other and the parties? And then, you know, where does that cross over and potentially, you know, cause issues versus, you know, what's the right amount? So I think that's great. Well, I know that we're going to do the after show. I'm excited to ask you the questions and kind of see where we go with the topics that come after that. For now, though, for people who are tuning in, they want to get a hold of you or they want to see what you're doing. They want to find out more. They want to chat with you. Maybe they're a broker on the journey kind of starting out. And they're like, okay, well, if Jim survived and he made it through starting with nothing, like, you know, what did he do? And or business owners who find this. I know that they can find you online. The website's a good place to go. So trilliumbusinessbrokerage.com, and it's T-R-I-L-L-I-U-M. So Trillium Business Brokerage. You can also find you on LinkedIn, Jim Nairn, N-A-I-R-N. They can find you. Also, we'll have your links in the show notes. Your email will be in the show notes if everyone reach out to you. We're recording this late March 2026. When is the book coming out?
So as soon as I can get my Kindle Amazon account working properly, because right now it is being very uncooperative, like extremely frustrated with that. As soon as possible, hopefully within the next week or two at tops, I should be able to have my way through that. But I can't guarantee because I've been trying it's just saying no.
Well, so for people tuning in and listening to this, it's a good chance by the time this goes live or by the time you find this, listener, watcher, supporter of the show. It will be live. We'll have a link in the show notes as soon as we have it, or you can just Google, Jim Nair and go to Amazon. Obviously he's trying to get it on there. I've been there myself several times. I know what that process is like when you want to publish something and you just can't. So I totally get it. And obviously I know you'll have that available. It'll be a race. Let's see if you win or the show goes live. Either way, hopefully people find it and get some value from it. Either way, Jim, appreciate you being here, sharing so much and being so, open and sharing about the journey and the challenges and the struggles and the growth and the opportunity and all that. I appreciate that. So thank you for being here.
My pleasure again, Jason. I'm happy to be a part of the show.
Yeah. And for everyone tuning in, appreciate all of you and all of your support. One of the biggest things I love doing is just getting this message out there, this content, conversations with people like Jim who, are doing what they can for business owners and wanting to be an authority, wanting to put content out there that then leads people to getting the help from a professional like Jim. We didn't talk about it, but he's gone through a lot of courses. He does have a bunch of initials after his name. And so he's earned that place to be able to help people. And the more that we can get this out there, the better, to help brokers, to help business owners, to help educate, magical thing that could happen as business owners start to give more than, 3 days or 3 minutes notice on wanting to sell their business. And they give Jim is 10 years or at least 3 to 5. And that would help everyone, every business broker across the globe with more chance. So hopefully share this, get this message out there. Appreciate you being here and supporting as a listener, as a supporter of the show. And until next time, stop hoping for deals and start growing your pipe.
Thanks for tuning in to the Business Broker Growth Show hosted by Jason Cutter. If today's episode helped you think differently about how to build your pipeline and grow your business, share it with another broker who's ready to make the shift from hoping for listings to engineering them. Join us again for the next episode of the Business Broker Growth Show, where brokers become trusted advisors.